Welcome to another In Wheel Time podcast, a 30-minute mini version of the In Wheel Time car show that airs live every Saturday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. Central. Welcome to the In Wheel Time car talk show. Coming up, how to prevent your catalytic converter from being stolen, from Consumer Reports. Jeff brings you his pre-owned car of the week.
Cool.
The Myers Manx. You ever heard of it?
Yeah.
You'll want to know about it. If you've never heard about it. If you have heard about it, then you know about it.
And you'll learn about
it. It's the Holy Grail. We get some Hollywood glamour from LA's own Jack Nerad.
Oh, yeah.
We'll also have the stories making automotive news headlines this week, just ahead in this edition of the In Wheel Time Car Talk Show. Howdy, along with David Ainsley. Mr. Mars is out today. King Conrad DeLong. We need more Jeff Zekin. I'm Don Armstrong. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate that. Let's go right now to Consumer Reports. Benjamin Preston, how to prevent your car's catalytic converter from being stolen and the precious metals that are inside of it. Hey, it's a great article you wrote. Got a chance to read it online at consumerreports.org. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Well, for starters, I don't think you're going to get a catalytic converter stolen out of your Myers Manx.
No, that won't happen, I wouldn't imagine, since,
doesn't have one.
No, well, yes, the original one doesn't, although there have been conversions with other engines that may or may not have had it.
There goes my story.
Yeah, but at any rate, sorry.
You're looking at an electric Myers Manx, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but that just doesn't have the pizzazz that a gasoline motor does.
You
but
need to hear you that. Ever worked on a Volkswagen engine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who hasn't?
Because if you didn't, it wouldn't work, right?
Pa-dum-ching. There we go. There's the rim shot.
I had a couple of those cars, yeah. The Manx, but just the Beetle.
Sure.
Anyway, to prevent catalytic converter thefts, It's really just the same advice that we give anybody who's trying to avoid A, having their car stolen, or B, having the contents or parts stolen off of their car, you know, because there are a number of parts that are commonly stolen off of cars. Of course, we know wheels and tires. If you've ever looked at Craigslist looking for a set of rims or something, I mean, let's be honest, we don't have statistics, but half that stuff's probably stolen.
No, I would agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, park your car in a well-lit area if you can, highly trafficked and well-lit. If you're street parking, if you're parking in the driveway, if you have motion sensor lights or cameras or anything like that, that can definitely be helpful. If you have to park someplace where there are definitely going to be people cruising around at night, you know, there might be other things you can do that'll cost money, but will cost less than a new catalytic converter. They have these these cable things that loop around the ends and go across the catalytic converter, or steel plates, things that make it more difficult, not impossible, but more difficult to steal the catalytic converter. So a thief will look under there, see that he or she can't cut the thing off in a quick couple of minutes with an electric sawzall, and we'll just move on to something easier because, I mean, like you were saying earlier, there's not a lot of money in reselling these things. It's just got to come from volume. So they probably want to work really, really quick and just grab as many as possible. That's why fleet owners have had a problem with this. You know, if they're
for
parking
years.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Like big trucks and stuff. They have big catalytic converters. And it's really easy to crawl under a truck and, you know, lop off the cats and just walk away with a lot full of converters.
So what vehicle lines did you find out were the most popular to steal?
Definitely Toyota Priuses, because they have two of them. They're very big, big converters. Pickup trucks, huge, because they have most new cars have a couple of catalytic converters, and pickup trucks are easy to crawl under.
Yeah, I tell anybody I know, especially if they drive a Toyota Tundra, which is one of the more popular ones to steal, park the passenger side as close to the curb as you can, like right on the curb. That makes it more difficult to get under. And the guy may just see yours and go, nah, don't want to jack with that. I want one I can get off in 10 seconds, not one that's going to take me 30 seconds to get off. So even something as simple as that can deter the guy that's driving through the neighborhood looking. But, you know, if they are adamant about stealing converters, they're going to take all they can.
Right. It's really, like you said, it's a deterrent thing. Anything that you can do to slow them down is going to reduce the likelihood that your catalytic converter or wheels or other parts are going to be stolen off your car. Tailgates are another big one.
Right.
Obviously now, you know, tailgates have cameras and other things inside of them. And it's not like you can just, I mean, I've ruined tailgates before where you go to the junkyard and you pay $35 for a new one, but now it's like a whole different thing.
With all the electronics.
Cost hundreds of dollars, if not more, to replace.
Well, you know, I kind of look at it as, do you remember the, I don't call it the two hooks kind of deal that you used to go to Walmart or Kmart and buy, go back, because everybody was breaking into steering column locks and stealing the vehicle. And it was this deal that you hooked underneath
the brake pedal.
And you put the other part on the steering wheel, clamped them both together, and then undid it.
Yeah.
And it took nothing to get those off of there. However, I'll bet you there are thousands and thousands of vehicles that didn't get stolen because it took a couple of extra seconds to undo that. Yeah, to circumvent it.
Deterrent.
Yeah. And I would imagine
that brings up another part that can be stolen, which is the airbag. The steering wheel mounted airbag can be stolen too, because, I mean, you were talking about repair shops with stacks of stolen catalytic converters. A repair shop could use stolen airbags to replace the airbags in an insurance job too.
Correct.
I'm not saying they would or wouldn't, but I'm sure that those disreputable businessmen are out there.
And what we talked about at the end of the last hour was what's out there to help the law do something about these guys when they go in and they've got a stack of 40 airbags, or they have a stack of 40 clearly sawzalled cutoff catalytic converters, because once they reach the repair shop, they can't prosecute the person who stole it because they're long gone. And here in Houston, they have no, you know, the police have no
recourse,
there's no action they can take.
I mean, it really just varies so widely from state to state. Something that might be easier to do in Texas might be more difficult to do here in New York, because, you know, we have a long sordid history of car and parts theft here, and the laws have followed that. So it could be somewhat more difficult in other states to, you know, it could be a big violation to even have anything to do with those parts.
So besides shall we say, shields or preventive kind of applications that you can put on that section of the exhaust system to prevent a sawzall, or at least kind of
slow them down.
Yeah, slow them down. What else? I mean, we've heard about painting them and then putting the VIN number in them.
Etching.
I'm sure you could do that. I hadn't looked into that method. I think that our suggestions had sort of hewed more towards just being careful where you park, you know, and thinking about that from a city perspective, because we're so close to New York City, there are blocks that are quieter than other blocks. Yeah. And there are places where there's going to be more foot traffic, even at night. And you could sort of figure out your odds. Okay, what neighbor's car has been broken into this month? You know, it's that kind of thing. I mean, you can definitely decrease your odds based on where you park.
So let's talk for a minute about the metals that are in there. And you had mentioned the metals, and there's basically three of them that seem to be worthy of stealing the catalytic converters. I can't imagine trying to scrape them out.
Extract
it out of the catalytic converter, but I guess somebody does that.
I actually found a YouTube video, believe it or not, that shows how to do this. It's not something that the average Joe could do, I don't think. It's more kind of like there's a lot of chemistry involved. I mean, this guy was he was a chemistry guy, so it was more of a fun experiment for him. But he took out the crushed up chunks and the dust from the converter housing. You throw away the scrap, you know, ferrous metals aren't worth much. And you take all this dust, and then they dissolve the chemicals out with various chemical solutions. You dissolve the precious metals out. So at the end, you're left with different different powders of different weights that you can separate.
So but, again, it's kind of like pan mining for gold.
Oh yeah, very much.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Do you? But, I mean, if you look at the cost of some of these things, you know, platinum. I looked at the price this morning. It was close to $1,000 an ounce. Palladium was more than $2,000, and then rhodium's all over the place. I mean, it's very rare. But it can be as low as, you know, 8,000. Today it was 16.
Okay, so we get these extracted. I'm a chemist. I get them extracted. Now, who am I going to sell that to? There's I mean, the rhodium dealer down at the corner?
Rhodium R Us.
Yeah, he's behind the Chevron.
He's behind the Chevron. Seriously.
If you're the guy who's cutting them off with a Sawzall, you're probably not going to be, like, shaking out the chunks and, you know, doing a chemistry experiment in your garage. You're probably just going to try to unload the things as quickly as possible to a plant that deals with that kind of stuff. And there have to be regulations in place from state to state that deal with who can buy that, who can do what with it. So it really comes back to where you live as to how easy or difficult it is to unload a catalytic converter.
So would it be somebody like a recycler that takes a catalytic converter, opens it up, right, does all of the chemistry stuff, and gets out?
Well, he might not even do all the chemistry stuff.
No.
He may extract the substrate and get rid of all the metal and
right,
sell the substrate to the next guy down the line who crushes it into a dust, who sells it to the next guy down the line. It's probably multiple steps so they can extract these metals.
It sounds like a meth lab.
It is kind of.
Yeah. So well, do you find that, what percentage would you say of catalytic converters are stolen are sent to the metal extraction side versus are sent to the resale side
for replacement?
Because I stole your converter, you got to get it replaced.
It really depends on where you live, because a metal extraction place probably isn't going to take that stuff in a small quantity for starters.
Okay.
Like, even if you have a bunch of guys sitting around shaking chunks out of catalytic converters all day and you come over, it's probably not going to be something along the scale that you would see from a metal recycler who gets like thousands of these things every year and then sends them all in at once to be processed or whatever. And then there are going to be regulations. Who can they do business with? You have to have a special license for this in your state. It's really going to depend where you live.
So it's much more complicated than just the guy that goes out there with the Sawzall is really the dummy in the whole deal.
Yeah,
and
he's looking to make $30 to $50.
Yeah, that's it. And then it goes down the line from there. But I think that if you could stop the guy from stealing the thing to begin with, then maybe we might get a handle on it. Good luck.
My limited understanding of organized crime is that the highest risk jobs usually present the lowest reward. So I'm sure that guy's not getting much
And what
money.
Part of organized crime have you been involved in the past?
I'm Italian.
Hey. He knows a guy.
Tony Two Thumbs.
Hey, he knows a guy.
Tony Two Thumbs.
Because he's got no other fingers. He's just got two thumbs. Hey.
So we're cutting off the Sawzall accident.
Yeah. Right. Well, the interesting information. Yeah, you know, once you start drilling down into it and you figure out that we're talking about maybe a quarter of an ounce of this, a half an ounce of that, or a little bit.
2 or 3 grams of this.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't see the reward. Hey, man, I'm going to go pick up, $30 off of this catalytic converter, and I've risked my life and all my friends, and I don't get it.
If you look at the amount of rhodium that's in a catalytic converter, it's 1 to 2 grams. That's still like $500, $600, $700 worth of precious metal there. You know, even though that's grams, it's still worth a lot of money when you figure that the price for an ounce is $16,000,
$20,000. Yeah, well, Don knows what a gram and an ounce is, but that's another story.
We got a scale in the back.
Yeah, I've gone to the electronic at least. Ooh. Yeah. It's not the one with the dial on it anymore.
But it has become, in Texas, and I would assume everywhere, it's become extremely dangerous as a vehicle owner to confront them, because typically they do it in a two or three guys are coming, one's under the car cutting it off, and the other two are playing
lookout.
Yeah. And they in Houston, they're armed. So there's every weekend there's gunfire surrounding catalytic converter thefts in Houston. It's almost scary. Stay back. Don't confront them.
Call the police.
Call the police. They'll be there in 20 minutes.
And depending on the vehicle can be totaled out because the cats are removed.
Because
sometimes they have more than one. Obviously, they do.
Some have two, some have three, four.
And then the cost of replacing that versus the value of the vehicle can be totaled out.
Well, I have to tell you. Yeah. So I had a truck to drive here just not too long ago, and I was going to go to a part of town for dinner. I thought, I'm not taking the truck. Because I don't want to risk having to fill out all the forms
on a press car
that I get. Yeah, because somebody stole the catalytic converter.
And you don't know it until you get in after dinner and it fires up and it's open exhaust system, and that'll scare the daylights out of you.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, use a little forethought, and when you get out and gone on a Saturday night to dinner, don't park it in some place that you're not familiar with.
Well, even places, though, you are familiar with, you know, the Walmart up there at Spring Cypress in, off of 249, there's catalytic converters stolen there every weekend, and it may be 7, 8, or 9 of them are stolen in one fell swoop. It, like I said, it doesn't take them 2 minutes to cut your converters off because they jump
it
under
takes seconds.
With the Sawzall and cut it off, and then they throw it in, and off they go to the next one.
You know, the other thing that I wanted to bring up before we let you go, Benjamin, is the fact that Consumer Reports, yes, become a member, spend the little amount of money that it takes to become a member of Consumer Reports. Great information there. But there's also, like your report, I can get your report without having to pay any money. And there are other tips and great information on consumerreports.org.
Yeah, I'd like to mention that we test everything scientifically. We buy all of our cars and the things that we test. So you can count on us being objective and, you know.
So what specifically do you do there?
I'm an autos reporter, so I cover a lot of things having to do with car sales, used car sales, any kind of mechanic stuff. I'm a shade tree mechanic myself. So
the information you gather goes into one of the reports that folks can look at.
Or do you write articles specific to your...
I write articles, but I use a lot of our data to write these articles because we have so much data from testing that we can actually use that to help consumers make informed choices.
ConsumerReports.org. Benjamin, great to talk to you. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Hey, if you'd like to get in touch with us here at the In Wheel Time Car Talk Show, shoot us an email. The address is info@inwheeltime.com. Time now for the racing calendar. I know that you've got... Formula One that Jeff is all anxious to hear about when that's going to...
I'm going to step out. I'm going to go to the break room.
Well, NHRA is at New England the weekend of the 3rd through the 5th.
They're off this weekend?
Yeah.
Amazing. Again.
And then they're going to be at Bristol, which is always a great place to race, and that's going to be June 17th through the 19th. NASCAR is in Kansas tomorrow. They're going to be in Texas on the 22nd. Mm-hmm. Charlotte on the 29th, which is the World 600. And Formula One is in the Spanish Grand Prix is next weekend. And then the Monaco Grand Prix is, again, the 29th, which is Memorial Weekend. So Memorial Weekend, if you're just a junkie like me, you can watch Monaco F1 early in the morning. You can watch the Indy 500 late morning to early evening. And then you can watch the World 600 in Charlotte in late evening. And sleep through half of it.
Well, and there's that. And also get an appointment the next day for your chiropractor because your head's gonna
going
to be
going round. IMSA on June the 3rd, they're going to be racing at Belle Isle in Detroit.
Yeah. Isn't it this last year for it?
I believe so. And then on the 4th, Belle Isle is going to have the Indy cars running. Mm-hmm. And then Gulf Coast Racing Series season starts July 2nd out at Houston Motorsports Park. And they are going to have a spec Miata race with a $5,000 purse for spec Miatas. I think you can buy some spec Miatas for $5,000.
A couple of them.
If you have one, get a hold of Richard Tomlin at Apex Motorworks and get yourself registered for that race.
Yep.
Time now to look at Jeff's car of the week, and it would be the Myers-Manx.
Myers-Manx.
You know, it was only built for a short period of time, relatively speaking. But I understand that I don't know what it is now, but yeah, I think that you can still buy them.
You can, and it wasn't necessarily under 10 grand for this one. It's summertime, and everybody's out. People going to the beach. You see the Galveston reports and everything. So I thought this would be a fun one to do. The Myers Manx is a dune buggy. It's a small recreational-oriented automobile initially designed by California artist, engineer, boat builder, and surfer Bruce F. Myers. He produced it in a Fountain Valley, California company called B.F. Myers & Company from 64 to 71 was the main construction days or the years of that. It's a kit car. It's a shortened Volkswagen chassis. The production went from 64 to 65, the prototype where there were 12 built. From 65 to 71, there was about 6,000 and about 2,000 present building of them. Now, you can find an old beat-up one for $2,000, you can get a professionally done Manx for, you know, mid-teens, $15,000, $16,000. He's an inventor, grew up in California. He was the surfing scene. He drove a 1930 vintage Ford to the beach with a surfboard, did all the surfboard stuff with Woody's back then. But he also constructed a 42-foot fiberglass catamaran that he did sail. He sailed around quite a bit of the world. Came back and then started saying a little dabbling in the hot rods and things of that nature and brought back the Manx for that. Old Red, the previous shots that we're looking at, Old Red had the tanks on it.
I dated her one time.
Okay. It was based on a Volkswagen.
Kept her shoes.
Yeah. The pumps. So he wanted to get into Ferdinand's Porsche original design and the lightweight vehicle and capable off-road vehicle. He kind of canvassed and cannibalized some Chevrolet pickups, specifically the trailing arms, so that he could put them on the vehicle itself. So it was great that he did that. You know, it was a lot of hot rodding back then and a lot of surfing. In fact, that shot you see right there, that's Mike doing the on-road or on-ramp testing.
On-ramp acceleration.
Yep. So it was announced back in 2020 that he did sell the company. He sold it to Trosdale Ventures, and there he went on to pass away in 2021.
And how old was he?
He was 94.
I hope to live that long.
Now, in 2016, he was on Jay Leno's Garage with the original red Manx.
Well, and a true Myers Manx is extremely collectible today.
Yes, it is.
You know, his boat building time is what gave him the skills to build these bodies.
Yep.
And after he started it, everybody else joined.
Can you buy a kit?
I don't think you can buy a Manx anymore.
No, but you can buy parts of it. And there's probably aftermarket guys out there that will do that. But an actual original Manx, they are pricey. If you find one.
No, I don't want the original. I just assume.
Yeah, you can still buy dune buggy bodies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might not be a Manx, but they all have a similar look,
and
they all strap on to a Volkswagen.
But the Manx was way ahead of its time because all of the other aftermarket Manxes, if you
followed
will.
Him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the same basic body design because it was so simple and so clever. I mean, one mold and it was done.
Mm-hmm. And next week I've got something kind of different. I'm going to do James Dean's car that he
the lost Porsche.
He lost his life, and I got a story of that for next week.
Okay, good. Well, I
not to impede on your stuff. But.
I have to tell you that my brother-in-law moved down here from Wisconsin in a 1954 Chevrolet 3/4-ton utility truck. Had the utility boxes on the side. It was all rusted up, and it was just awful. It had a 235 Blue Flame 6 in it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the vehicle that I was in the process of, never finished it, turning it into a dune buggy. Now, you're going to go, what?
Let's have a 3,000-pound dune buggy.
So the utility,
and that's lightweight.
On the Bonneville Salt Flats.
So the utility box came off first, and then the cab and fenders and all of that. So all I had was a frame and a motor and wheels and suspension. Okay. And my dad worked at Waukesha Motor Company and knew a guy that was handy with a torch. So
stealing catalytic converters, but they didn't have them back then yet.
And so the truck was so long, it had a two-piece drive shaft with a yoke in the middle.
Yeah.
Right. So I said, let's just take the yoke out of the middle of it and take one piece of the drive shaft out and shorten it up that much. It was short. Once we got finished with it, it was short. I took the wheels, had some new rims put on the wheels, which, I don't know, 16 lug wheels or something. I don't remember what they were. It was a lot. And I had some great big wide rims put on those wheels. And I put some farm implement tires on the back that were massive. They were this wide.
It was a wheel stander.
It was a wheel stander. And it had a 4-speed with a granny first gear. Mm-hmm. And I put 2 1-barrel carburetors on that 6-cylinder.
And wide open throttle and granny, it'd go 4 miles an hour.
It would.
But boy, it'd get there in a hurry.
Straight up like this. And I had more fun. And what I did is I took the bed, cut the bed in 2 pieces. So at least I had a floorboard up here in the back of it. Of course, none of it was really long at all. Just to kind of have something hanging across the top of the frame. I had more fun with that thing, driving it around the block and pulling wheelies, than 3/4 race cam. I had 2 Rochester 1-barrels on an
Offenhauser
yeah, manifold.
That was the manifold of choice.
Dual point distributor Mallory. I had it all fixed up. That thing.
Whatever happened to it?
I sold it. I wound up selling it because I never finished it. I got into a radio career and stayed in my parents' garage forever, and I finally said, "Look,
he's one of them.
I am one of those."
He lived in his parents' garage
until
he was 53.
No,
63.
63, that's what it was. Hey, the In Wheel Time Car Show streams on iHeartRadio, Facebook, YouTube, and InWheelTime.com. Podcasts available from your favorite podcast channel. And the In Wheel Time Car Show continues right after this.
Father's Day weekend, Saturday, June 18th, 2022. It's the next Tailpipes and Tacos Cruise-In, and you're invited. Tailpipes and Tacos Father's Day edition will be at the same Loopy Tortilla in Katy, 8 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, June 18th. It's the only place cruisers compete for trophies and other prizes. Enter your vehicle for best hot rod, best classic, and best modern classic. Tailpipes and Tacos is Houston's coolest cruise-in and is your opportunity to see the best hot rods, show cars, classics, and resto mods, and get Loopy Tortilla breakfast tacos and adult beverages. There's no entry fee, and cars will automatically compete for custom Loopy trophies and other prizes. It all happens at the Loopy Tortilla Tex-Mex in Katy on the Grand Parkway at Kingsland Boulevard, just south of I-10. Kick off summer with Tailpipes and Tacos Father's Day edition, Saturday, June 18th. The In Real Time Car Talk Show will be there too. Celebrate Father's Day, the start of summer, and the return of Tailpipes and Tacos. Saturday morning, June 18th, 8 to 11. We'll see you then, weather permitting. Want to take a minute to tell you about Gulf Coast Auto Shield, a Houston detail company like no other. Gulf Coast Auto Shield offers paint correction services that'll give your car, truck, or SUV a like-new shine. Afterwards, you'll want to protect it with a professionally installed nano-ceramic coating or protection film. Worried about your very expensive windshield getting damaged, broken, or cracked? Let Gulf Coast Auto Shield install ExoShield, a windshield protection film. Give John Gray a call today or check out their website, gcautoshield.com. Hey, whether you own a new, ultra-expensive, exotic, or a 5-year-old Suburban, Gulf Coast Auto Shield will help keep your investment looking like the day it rolled off the assembly line. Gulf Coast Auto Shield is conveniently located on the South Sam Houston Parkway, just south of I-69, the Southwest Freeway. Meet the staff and check out all of their services online right now at gcautoshield.com. The In Wheel Time Car Talk Show is now part of the iHeart family. Now you'll have access to 24/7 car talk anytime you need a fix. Just download the iHeart Radio app and ask for In Wheel Time Car Talk, and there we are. Be sure to save us in your iHeart library for instant access. No matter where you are, you have the best car talk show right on your PC, laptop, or mobile device, and never have to worry about finding us again. Of course, you can always get access to our video and audio streams via InWheelTime.com and your favorite podcast channel, and all of this is free to you. From the iHeartRadio app, you'll not only hear our Saturday morning live show, but the best shows of the past, updated weekly. Never miss a minute of up-to-date new car reviews, pre-owned reviews, Conrad's Car Clinic, informative interviews, automotive news, and the most fun car talk show on the planet. Just download the iHeartRadio app, search for In Wheel Time Car Talk, save it to your library, and with a tap of the icon, you'll be in touch with your favorite car talk team. In Wheel Time Car Talk, streaming now on iHeart.com/InWheelTimeCarTalk. That's it for this podcast episode of the In Wheel Time Car Show. I'm Don Armstrong, inviting you to join us for our live show every Saturday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. Central on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and our InWheelTime.com website. Podcasts are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartPodcast, Podcast Addict, TuneIn, Pandora, and Amazon Music. Keep listening, and we'll see you soon.